This podcast is sponsored by Active Skin Repair, a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients. Okay, guys, I am probably one of the most accident-prone people on the planet. You can blame it on many things, bad luck, poor spatial perception, but it all results in the same thing. Bree can injure herself literally anywhere, anytime. Take, for instance, last week, I was plucking my eyebrows, people, and I stabbed myself in the hand. Next thing I know, I am bleeding everywhere going, what the heck just happened? But luckily for me, I had some Active Skin Repair on hand, just one spray, and it felt so much better. By the next day, it was not red, not sore. It was fantastic. I love this stuff. Active Skin Repair can be used to treat a wide range of skin issues, and since it's all natural, non-toxic, it's perfect for people like me with sensitive skin. It works by utilizing hydrochloric acid, which mimics a natural immune response to cleanse, soothe irritation, reduce inflammation, and support the healing. With over 500,000 happy customers, thousands of five-star reviews, and ingredients that are so safe and clean that it can be used from the youngest member of your family all the way up to the oldest, most accident prone like me, you can have one simple solution for your family's skin health needs. So visit www.activeskincarerepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and get 20% off your order by using the code NOGUILT. That's www.activeskinrepair.com. Use the code NOGUILT to get 20% off your order.
When we talk about breaking generational trauma, yeah, I've got some generational trauma that I had to unpack and unload and be okay with daddy issues. Because I think that's the difference, is I'm not expecting my daddy issues to go away. I'm expecting to be able to identify, oh, no, I am feeling this way because of abandonment issues. Oh, no, I am feeling this way because I have trust issues. If I can identify, oh, here is where I'm getting triggered, and it's not because my children are screaming in my face. Yeah. This is something deeper. This is something inside me. As a person.
Welcome to the No Guilt Mom Podcast. I'm your host, Joanne Crone, joined here by the lovely Bree Tucker.
Why, hello, hello, everybody. How are you?
We are starting the month of February off with laughter and fun because I think we need a little more funny, right, Bree?
We do need. Well, actually, if you ask me, we are quite hilarious behind closed doors.
We were laughing with Gwenna when she came on, our guest today, who you are going to enjoy so, so much. Just a heads up, this podcast, please put those headphones in your ears for it because it is for adults only, this episode. It's true to the title of her amazing book, Mama Cusses. So let's put us out there right now. But we were laughing so hard before we even started the interview. We're like, we're just going to hit record. Let's just hit record. And you can hear this band back and forth.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we were really relating on the whole having teens, man. It's teens are every stage of parenting has got its struggles and its challenges. And I've said this a million times before, but teens are just like preschoolers, but with better vocabulary. And our particular point of bonding here was how the teens like to use their vocabulary against us.
And you're going to hear it at the beginning of this episode. So Gwenna Lathlin, she is the creator of Mama Cusses, CEO of Pleasant Peasant Media, host of the Childproof podcast from Betches Media, and author of Mama Cusses, a field guide to responsive parenting and trying not to be the reason your kids need therapy, which drops on March 3rd, 2024. We have a link in the show notes to pre-order. You can find her on TikTok and Instagram on her popular channel at Mama Cusses. And we hope you enjoy our interview with Gwenna.
You want mom life to be easier. That's our goal too. Our mission is to raise more self-sufficient and independent kids, and we're going to have fun doing it. We're going to help you delegate and step back. Each episode, we'll tackle strategies for positive discipline, making our kids more responsible, and making our lives better in the process. Welcome to the No Guilt Mom Podcast.
Yeah. Early in the pre-show, we were talking about how much we loved your Best of 2023 TikTok and the use of teenage slang and like her pulling out the Oreo, the double stuffed Oreo. She's like, Oreo dupe? You're like, that's a real Oreo.
What's a dupe then? I thought a dupe was a fake. We have real Oreo money in this house now, kid.
Wait. There's no Hydrox. No.
My opinion is that they just make it up on the fly. My husband and I don't even try anymore. We will intentionally use all the slang we possibly can wrong just to piss them off. Just to make, and it's only my daughter that cares. My son doesn't even answer ever. He just stares. You just get the stare.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, judging. Well, and
Ellie is the master of these little passive aggressive head shakes.
Yeah. Oh,
just,
really?
No, Mom. Just the tiniest little wiggle of the head is just the utmost disappointment in everything I am as a person and a parent.
It's the side eye. It's the
Thanks,
side
kid.
Eye.
And you're like, right? God, I don't even know. Were we like that to our parents when we were teens?
Yes.
Probably, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, parents are a real bitch.
I get right? called them cringy all the time. Mom, oh, don't say that. Yeah. That's cringe. That's cringe. I was just in a race this weekend, actually. And like, you know, they say it so much that you get like this pleasure out of making them cringy. You want to like push it to the farthest. And so
I get choogie too. Do you get choogie?
No, I've never heard choogie.
I have heard that on the Holderness family. They did something about that, but I haven't heard that word yet out of my kids.
Yeah. So choogie is like when we say we're adulting, it is the most millennialisms. It's choogie. So there's cringe, and anybody can be cringe.
But
choogie is acting like one of those 2007 BuzzFeed millennials. That's choogie. And every millennial went, oh, I know that one. I was taught that one.
I'm going to use that and see if my kids even know that one. Maybe I'll get a one up on that.
Maybe it's like, regional. I learned from a Keith Lee TikTok a new slang that I'm not even going to use because I don't know enough about it. I'm scared to say the word. Like, maybe that's not one of the words I'm allowed to say because I am mayonnaise colored. I don't know.
I don't know.
I want to be respectful, but I don't understand.
None of it makes any sense. Nope.
No.
But the worst thing is that we're cooler than our parents were, though.
Yeah. No? Except we're probably saying the exact same things they did about our slang.
I was going to say, eyebrow of skepticism. I don't know if I'm cooler than my mom was when my mom was 40. I have not figured out the cool ranking scale of 40.
The fact of are you, but are you the same age as your parents were? Like, I feel like I am still not as much of an adult as my parents were at my age. I am failing at this adult
I always
thing.
Feel that way about myself. Like, yeah, I always feel that way about myself.
You said that this morning. No. You're like, I'm still 17.
Yeah. No, it's weird because I'm entering the part where my body definitely reminds me how old I am. Mm-hmm. But my brain is like, no, you're 18. Try it anyway.
I was just actually talking about that this morning. I'm like, I am perpetually 17 in my head, and I will go and I will do anything that my 17-year-old self will do, even more so now, because I feel like being older has its benefits because you have this perception of the world now where it's like, I really don't care what people think about me. So mm-hmm. When it's 17, you're so worried about everything.
I tried to do a thing that should have been simple. So we have a breakfast bar mm-hmm. in my kitchen, and I tried to hop up and sit on it, except it's breakfast bar height. And 17, 18-year-old me definitely would have had the core and arm strength to hop up and sit on it. Instead, I bruised the lower part of my back, just sort of like throwing it into the countertop.
That hurt.
Because my 40-year-old body was like, bitch, no. Like, my brain was like, you can do this. My body was like, are you sure?
Oh, no. See, I love this conversation because these are things that like we as moms are people foremost instead of parents. And I feel like so many parenting books like yours coming out soon, Mama Cusses, yes. in particular, like don't regard the mom as the person first. It's all about the parenting instead of the person. And yours really digs into the person. And I feel like I got to know you so much just through your introduction and how much you hate brown.
I hate brown.
You hate brown. And as soon as you started talking about your dad too, I'm like, oh, something happened there because there are a lot of adjectives describing that. Like the first way you introduce him, you're like, he had the mindset of a toddler. Explain some more about that, Quinna.
So my dad was very funny and he was very dense. There was a point at which things could have gone very different for him, but they didn't. And he made some choices that are questionable at best. And he was really funny. That's where I got my humor. So for as much as I will trash talk my dad, because he dipped when I was 11 and then he came back when I was 17 and it was weird. But I will say that my trauma didn't make me funny. My genetics did, because my dad was hilarious and he knew it, but he also knew that that's all he had. Because someone could out-talk him the minute he couldn't make a joke of it anymore. Now, he was an absolute shoebox.
Just... I haven't heard that description before. A shoebox.
Yes.
So, small and empty?
Yeah, thin and easily discardable.
Oh!
Thin, okay.
Oh, okay. For growing up, essentially, I had to describe that part is because a lot of my parenting decisions came from daddy issues. Yeah. When we talk about breaking generational trauma, yeah, I've got some generational trauma that I had to unpack and unload and be okay with daddy issues. Because I think that's the difference, is I'm not expecting my daddy issues to go away. I'm expecting to be able to identify, oh, no, I am feeling this way because of abandonment issues. Oh, no, I am feeling this way because I have trust issues. Oh, no, I am feeling this way. If I can identify, oh, here is where I'm getting triggered, and it's not because my children are screaming in my face. Yeah. This is something deeper. This is something inside me as a person. I say in my book a ton of times, gentle parenting or responsive parenting starts with you, the parent.
Yes,
you have to get good at your own emotions. You have to get good at your own problems. And if you are coming into parenthood with generational trauma on board, you have to be able to look at that and go, nope, that's my f***ed up brain being f***ed up.
Yep. No, that's 100%. We have a whole podcast episode, Joanne, right? Like, where we talk about, like, so many times we are parenting through fear. But if we don't realize we're parenting through fear, we're just making it 20 times worse.
Yeah. And it's so interesting, too, because once you realize your own traumas, if you think about it in a way where a lot of people get triggered by their kids and are like, you know, my kids aren't respecting me, or my kids are saying these things to me, and then they feel bad themselves. In that moment, we are trying to gain our self-respect from a 4 or 5-year-old. And if you think about it like that, you're like, this is kind of ridiculous. Like, what does this 4 or 5-year-old know about it?
They're not even good at being a person yet, but let them let them define me.
Yes, let them define me. Exactly.
I still need their acceptance like I did of the other teens when I was a teen. What is going on here?
I was a people pleaser and my daddy left me. Please stop acting like this.
Yeah. No, it's so funny, though, when we think about it that way. We're like, whoa, we want them to define us. And then you realize that, okay, I need to teach this little person how to people. And something I really enjoyed in your book is all of the little nicknames that you give to your kids and what you call them. And we're going to get into it right after this break. Hey, all, it is Joanne
and Bree here,
and we want to tell you about a podcast that you should check out. It's called Understood Explained. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Uturbe, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs.
And in this latest season of Understood Explained, it covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. We actually just listened to the episode, IEPs, Does My Child Need an IEP? And here is what we loved about it.
I loved that it was so digestible. Like, it was such a short episode, and all of the topics, which could be really confusing to parents, were easily explained.
And I loved how they gave great concrete examples, because you know how much I love me a good example. They explained what kind of services and supports you could actually see on a child's IEP or individual education plan. And they explained those acronyms. That nothing drives me more crazy than when there's acronyms and I don't get it. I don't know what it stands for. They took the time to explain everything in so much detail and to cover concerns that a lot of families have about special ed services.
To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains, or just click on the link in our show notes. Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free. One of my first introductions, Gwenna, to the nicknames and everything that you give people is what you call babies, your pet names, womb fruit, chaos yes. goblin, my sex trophy.
That one was very funny.
I get that. That is the one that the minute I call a child a sex trophy, I get two things that happen. First of all, most people are like, oh my God, they are sex. I had sex. I got a trophy. And then I get the other part that like, that's disrespectful to your children. Sharon, I am not looking at my child and calling it a sex trophy to his face.
No, my other favorite was evicted parasite.
Oh,
no, I mean, so my sister and I were just talking about this weekend. She is 6 months pregnant and she mm-hmm. absolutely hates being pregnant.
I hated
being pregnant as well. And like, people like see like, oh, it's this beautiful, wonderful thing. Well, yeah, after they're out of your stomach and not invading your body anymore, I'll look at them and be like, this is amazing. But get them out.
These kids cost me yogurt. Any hope I have of making my own iron? They're parasites, all right? They permanently rearranged my innards. My entire abdomen just splits in the center and there's nothing I can do about it. Yes, they're parasites. But that doesn't mean that they're not lovable parasites.
They're lovable. They're the cutest parasites ever.
Ever, yeah.
My kids were just harsh. They were harsh little parasites. My son used my placenta as his personal punching bag. So I was hospitalized for almost that whole pregnancy. And then my daughter, I swear to God, she had fingernails and she was scratching her way out.
So I've got a teenager and then I've also got 5-year-old twins. And
how did
my
you do that?
Twins, first of all, I carry real low. We're into pregnancy talk now. I carry real low. So they are like in my pelvis the whole time. And then something I didn't have with the first one was something called round ligament pain. So those ligaments that keep all of those muscles still. Yeah, mine were real stretched out because they were two human beings right. tap dancing on them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was not a fan.
No, when I read you had twins, I'm like, one baby exhausted me at a time. Did twins sleep at the same time? Like, how do you even function?
No. You know, honestly, I can't tell you how I did it because I have a theory about the newborn fog. And the newborn fog lasts anywhere. It starts from about 2 weeks if your baby was born at term, because the first 2 weeks it's the honeymoon period. It's a sentient meatloaf that while it does need like a lot of attention, it's not so bad. But then after that 2-week-ish part, and like some babies don't get the honeymoon period, they go like 100 miles an hour into needy fucks. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember the first year. It's just in the fog.
It's in the fog. I don't remember the first 3 years of my son, really. I have to go back to pictures because like he didn't let me sleep for 3 years.
Yeah, no. The Geneva Convention outlawed sleep deprivation as torture. But yeah, let's have kids.
Yeah. And let's leave it to mom to be the one who takes care of them 90% of the time.
Right.
Oh my gosh. So I was listening to another podcast about this and it's really interesting because she was talking about mom guilt. And first of all, her obstetrician was like, hey, are you going to hire maybe a night nurse for your baby? And she's like, that is such a privileged thing to do, like hire a night nurse. And then her OB stopped her. She's like, wait a minute. What we are asked to do right now in society as women is just not what we're designed for. We were designed to have babies in villages with many generations above us who could give the moms a break so that moms could sleep, so that moms could rest, so that moms can take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. And this whole expectation nowadays that we should be able to do everything is just not what we as humans are designed for. And I found that so impactful and so well said.
I read My Clean Du Clefs Hunt Gather Parent, a book I highly recommend. Mm-hmm. And in it, she describes several various cultures that parent very differently than Western cultures. Mm-hmm. And one of them, the kids are raised entirely by the grandparents. The parents are there, but they're the ones who are still young, healthy, agile. Their joints aren't gone. They don't have arthritis. Cognitively, they're as healthy as they're ever going to be. And so they are out plowing fields and repairing roofs and standing up walls and doing all of the work that maintains the village, that meets the physical, the Maslow's hierarchy of needs there. And the grandparents are raising the kids. They're the ones maintaining their behavior. They're the ones training them up in the way of how we contribute and how we help. And that mom who just had a baby and handed it off to her own mom, she will have a chance to raise her grandchildren. So there is an expectation of parenting, of community raising of the children. And there's no guilt. There's no shame in a mom having a baby going, oh, I love you. It's adorable. Here, mom. And then off she goes to do the work that she needs to do without the sleep deprivation. While she's not, I don't want to say it's a waste of the prime of our lives, but like for those of us who have kids in our 20s and 30s, we have a lot of capacity to do a lot more, but we spend 2 to 3 years in absolute fog from being sleep deprived because an adult's sleep needs are not the same as a baby's sleep needs.
No, they're not.
Not at all.
They're not at all. Yeah, there is a lot of mom guilt that goes on with it. And in your book, you call your mom guilt Alice, which I love. I love giving the other name for it. Why did you settle on Alice?
I have no idea.
It just seems like an Alice.
I have never once put serious thought into anything I have ever named, including my children. It was the vibe at the time, as the kids say. It was a vibe. It felt correct. I did try to put thought into my oldest name. She was going to be Haley, and then she was born and I went, not that. And then when they asked me, they're like, okay, so what's her name? I was like, I don't know. And they're like, okay, we're just gonna leave you with this large stack of paperwork for the birth certificate and the social security cards. I was like, Abigail.
bring me that Amy book. First name, there we go.
Yeah. There we go. Abigail, please don't make me fill out the paperwork by myself. I don't want to.
That'd be pretty daunting. We, no guilt mom, we like to call our mom guilt Bob. Bob is just like a patriarchal male, basically. Telling you all the stuff you're doing wrong.
But I want you to consider something, because I have Alice, and Alice gets a name, but Alice is my friend.
Yeah.
My mom guilt is my friend. Now, she's not my favorite person. She's like a bitchy librarian. She remembers everything. Mm-hmm. She catalogs every mistake I've ever made, every negative feeling I've had about an interaction with my children, with my children's teachers, and anything that possibly could have gone wrong, Alice remembers. And Alice likes to trot that out whenever she feels like it. But I appreciate Alice, because while Alice is sometimes a little overexcited about reminding me of all the times that I nearly effed up my own kids, what that does is it gives me an opportunity to go, wait, I've been here before. Because here comes Alice going, hey, do you remember the last time we had a fight about the red cup versus the blue cup? How did you handle that? How did that go? It didn't go well, did it? You're going to do it again that way? Oh, okay. No, Alice, I will not handle it that way because it didn't go well last time. Oh. And so Alice is this constant reminder of, this is the mistake you made. Do you want to try it again, or do you want to try it a different way? That said, there is a whole other entity that lives in my head, doesn't even get a name, and it's mom shame. Mom shame is that feeling of worthlessness, or like we don't deserve to do the things we need to take care of ourselves.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So mom shame is what makes us feel like shit for wanting a shower that lasted longer than 5 minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But oh, well, now I'm asking my partner to watch the kids. They're his kids. I'm here gendering them according to my relationship arrangement.
And he spends 40 minutes in the bathroom. So like, why? Why
am I feeling bad when I have the resources, I have the support, I have the network to just go take and everything all in one shower. If it can be scrubbed, sanded, gritted, or graded, I have the time to do that because I have that level of support. And not all parents do, but I do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So mom shame wants me to feel bad about that. Mom shame is what remembers that time that you had to poop. And that's when your baby decided it was dying of hunger. And so you're mid poop and it's losing its mind right there in front of you, but you can't do anything. Cause again, mid poop.
Yeah. So like distinguishing, yeah, this mom guilt and this mom shame. I look at it a little different way. The Bob isn't really berating us as much. The Bob is like this overactive being that's trying to keep us safe, is trying to tell us all these things that, okay, if you don't do this, you're going to lose your social connection, basically. But Bob is like totally wrong and going about it the entirely different way. And so when Bob starts overreacting, like our job is to comfort Bob and be like, okay, this is really what's going on. We can calm down. We could take a seat and it's going to be okay. But distinguishing between mom guilt and mom shame, I think is so good because mom guilt is the thing that tells you, hey, I could do this a different way. I could do this better. And mom shame is like, you are a horrible, awful, no good person and you don't deserve to be here, which is totally unproductive.
And the way I recommend being able to, if you're going to go with a system of parsing out Alice, who is my mom guilt versus my mom shame, who's just a Cactosaurus Rex, if we're going to parse those things out, the way that Alice doesn't get as antsy about it is apologies. The minute you realize, oh, I handled that not in a way that was conducive or helpful or useful in any way, shape, or form. I'm mad. They're mad. The toy is still broken. Nothing in that interaction went well. I'm going to apologize for it. And that is the thing that cools Alice's jets. Because then when she trots that back out, hey, you remember the time they knocked over the piggy bank and shattered it 2 days after getting it? You flipped your lid on that. And then you said, sorry. So now that you have discovered yet another broken piggy bank, how are you going to handle it? Because last time you had to apologize, which is good. You did good. How do we avoid getting to the point that you need to apologize again? That's what Alice does. And Alice is very much soothed by apologizing to your kids when you make the mistake, by helping them learn how to apologize, by showing them how to do it. That keeps Alice, okay, I'm going to be nice. Because when you don't have that sort of closure, that's when Alice gets to team up with mom shame and just make you feel like a trash human being every time you look at a piggy bank because you never resolved that.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.
Do you feel like Alice ever gets a little hyperactive with the apologizing and apologizing for stuff that Alice doesn't need to apologize for?
Yeah. She does.
How do you treat her with that?
Mostly I self-bully myself, but I am a millennial. So
we learned
why. I don't recommend that.
The self-bullying.
No, for Alice getting a little over egregious with the want to apologize. So true story. The other day, I said something, and in the moment before it left my mouth, I was like, this is going to piss the girl child off. She is going to hate this information. Mm-hmm. So I said it anyway, because the information that was going to make her cry, that was going to infuriate her to the point of real grief and emotion, was go put on your pajamas. It's bedtime.
That's the most horrible thing in the world.
She just didn't want to do that. And so there was a part of me that Alice was like, apologize to her. No, this is a valid boundary that I have set.
Yeah.
My child needs to go to bed. They have to get up at 6:30 in the morning to go to school. Like, they need sleep. I haven't done anything wrong. I have simply given them a boundary that very five-year-old brain was like, I don't like it. Okay, cool. You don't have to like it. Put your PJs on or sleep naked. I don't care, but go to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have to apologize for that. And Alice very much wanted me to, like, you pissed her off. She's going to remember that. Yeah. She's going to talk about this in therapy when she's an adult.
You're going to give her mommy issues now. Now you've given mommy issues. How's about that?
And in that case, I had to, like, just back it up and be like, no, I am the adult here. Because Alice, by the way, is like a 14-year-old girl in my head.
Yeah, those 14-year-old girls, they are quite
demanding. Right. And they know everything.
Demanding.
And they do know everything.
They know everything.
And they're
illogical.
Right.
That's in no way to trash teenagers, but I have been a 14-year-old girl. So that's Alice is 14-year-old me. Mm-hmm. Deep into my emo phase, deep into my angst phase, poetry written in red pen because it looked like blood. That's what Alice is in my head. It's just 14-year-old me being hypercritical of everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's good. And then it's like when you picture it as yourself, I feel like you're able to be a lot more loving and compassionate to that person and talk them through their issues. Exactly. Yeah. What is coming up for you now that you're really excited about, Gwenna?
So my book, Mama Cusses, A Field Guide to Responsive Parenting and Trying Not to Be the Reason Your Kids Need Therapy from St. Martin's Press is out March 5th. It is available for pre-order now as we record. I'm not sure when this episode is coming out, but right now it is available for pre-order. I'm sure the lovely humans at No Guilt Mom Podcast will give you a link.
Yes, there will be. There is a link below to pre-order.
So yeah, that's available. And right now, if you pre-order the book, you can provide your proof of receipt, your proof of purchase to a different link, and we'll send you a free sheet of Mama Cuss's stickers.
You know, we love a good sticker over here at No Guilt Mom. We have all the stickers here. And yes, go get a pre-order of the book. And so you can get the stickers as well.
Well, and these are the good kind. I made them give me I would have had more stickers, but I made them give me the good kind that you can put on your water bottle and they will stay through the dishwasher cycle.
Oh,
those are important.
Those are special.
Those are those plasticky vinyl ones that'll stay.
Yeah. You gotta have them. Else they just go away.
Yep.
And it's no good. Well, I highly recommend getting Gwenna's book. It is so funny, Gwenna. I was laughing reading it, and just like your sense of humor just tickles me. And where you say like your mom has a slow burn sense of humor, I feel like you have that too, because like you did say something, you'd be like, ha! Yes. So it's just completely enjoyable to read while putting that parenting information out there in a really doable way. So go get the book, pre-order it right now. And Gwenna, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so much I have to tell you, Bree, for this interview, because it brought up so many stories that I wanted to tell during it, and I couldn't, because I'm like, that would get us off track. No, that would get us off track. No, that would get us off track. It's like constantly raining in my ADHD brain.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, no, Joanne, no.
I had plenty of things that I was all like, oh, and you said this in your book, and I had that same thing happen to me.
Yeah, we're like, focus.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely a practice and self-control and quieting that ADHD voice of like, no, 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 no. You only have so long. Talk about what you have.
No, it's funny because when we were recording the intro, we mentioned about the struggles of having teenagers and how they're different than having toddlers and preschoolers. Well, I just spent some time with my preschool nephew over the weekend, and oh my gosh, I do not miss that age at all.
What happened?
There's some things, like you get really great stories, and this is what I miss about it. You do get really great stories, but it is just exhausting. Like when we got to my parents' house, my nephew was there and he was spending the night, and he was like bouncing off the walls kind of energy, like showing off for his cousins, just doing all these things. And his favorite word right now is murder.
Oh my God.
Because we're on the couch and he's like, okay, I murdered you. I murdered you. I murdered you. And we're like where are you getting this? Where are you? And then the other day he heard a sound and my daughter's like, yeah, there was a bump. And he said, oh, I think someone just got murdered.
Oh my God.
I was talking to my sister about this and she's like, oh my gosh. Like I tell the dog, like she has a puppy right now that drives her insane. Like a year and a half.
Murder you.
Yeah. She tells the dog, I'll murder you.
Yeah.
But then also she's like, wait a minute. And she thinks about her partner and she's like, he watches Dateline.
Oh my God. Is he watching like the why women kill shows or whatever?
Yeah. No more Dateline. Dateline is not a safe show for the toddler anymore.
Oh my God. Because I can't imagine that because the toddlers say and preschoolers say stuff at the most inopportune time. You'll be like enclosed on like a, I don't know, like a elevator and like suddenly it stops and kids, you just see him slowly turn his mom and being like, are you going to murder them, mom? Or something like that.
Well, he almost stood in the parking lot. He didn't want to go home. And so he screamed and he's like the murder scream. He's like, ah, murder!
Are you serious?
My daughter's running away. Because another thing he did at the table, we were all at Zen Burger. They have a location in Tucson, which is the most awesome place. And he's sitting across from me. He's like, okay, Auntie Jo. Oh, he holds his hand up in front of me. And he's like, open the lid. And I'm like, okay. And I pull open his thumb. And he's like, okay, put your finger inside. I put my finger inside. Turn it around. I'm like, okay, I turn it around. Take it out. I took my finger out from his hand. And then he looks at me. He's like, thanks for cleaning my toilet.
Oh, my God.
And we all bust out laughing. And we're like, where did you get this? Like, you don't go to preschool.
Yeah, where does he get that?
All of us are adults are like Googling on our phone. Thanks for cleaning my toilet. Bluey.
That's a Bluey thing? Okay, I've never seen Bluey. I know what Bluey is. I've seen clips of it. I've never actually watched it. Clearly, I need to.
And my sister's like, well, there goes Bluey as a safe show. I mean, it was pretty tame, but it was hilarious. It's just, I don't miss that 24/7 all the time anymore. But I have to say, in little increments, it is so funny.
It's so funny. It's fun. That's my jam is that age. But I'm starting to come around to teens a little bit more. Mine are becoming a little bit more interactive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of benefits in teens. Like this weekend, I was away from the house all day. And it was up north from my parents, like a 20-minute drive from my parents' house. And my sister's like, well, why don't you just have mom and dad bring the kids up here? And then you can leave from here up back up to Phoenix. And I'm like, yeah, that's a great idea. I had nothing packed at home. And so I'm like, hey, can I talk to my daughter? And she's first of all, she's like, I'm on the phone already, mom. You're on speaker. Okay. But then I'm like, hey, can you pack up all of my stuff for me? Can you just put it in and make sure I'm all good? And she's like, yeah, I could do that. And that's something that teenagers are great for because they have now those skills that they can really help out with and make your life so much easier.
It's fantastic.
And they're cool little people too. They have these little thoughts and stuff that are really interesting from like human behavior. That's what I always look. They're little science projects every time. I'm looking at them as my little psychology projects. And so that's how I keep myself entertained when I'm bored to death.
Okay. I'm trying to think like, I don't know. I guess maybe science projects. There's a lot of this didn't go great last time. We're going to try this differently, but it's constantly full of things these days. It's funny. At the beginning of the episode, we talk about the whole trying to keep up with their terms, their language. I don't even try. I do not even try. I just intentionally take all the slang I possibly can. How many can I use in one sentence the wrong way?
What's been your latest sentence?
Oh,
let's try it now.
Jesus, I don't know. It's been a while because they've learned they don't say any slang around me anymore at all because I will kill it.
Well, we could try. There's a Stanley very popular with kids. This Stanley is bussin', no cap. I'm sure I definitely said stuff wrong there. And probably it's cringy crogy.
Oh, no. What was the other one that she had? Yeah.
I can't remember it. Crogy? Crogy?
No, it was...
Crugy? Crugy?
No, it. Oh, I know that word. I just hadn't heard it in a while. Okay, I don't want to keep everybody on trying to like get through my memory. I'd have to look it up to find it. But yeah, the whole like millennial term of us trying to use their slang. Like, I don't know. I just feel like we had way cooler slang, but that's just me. We had cooler slang and we weren't such pains in the butts to our parents sometimes. But then again, on the flip side, I do recall quite a bit as I'm going through things because I have decided that somehow my youngest, my daughter, is my sister's child. I somehow am raising my sister's child. And I'm like, that's not fair. That's not how this was supposed to work. I was the good rule follower. How do I have this kid that's like, okay, we're going to try this? Well, you didn't say that. You didn't specify. You said that I had to be home at 10, but you did not specify AM or PM. So, you know, like that's what my youngest would say.
That must be fun.
Oh, it keeps you on your toes. We'll say that.
Well, go get Gwenna's book, Mama Cusses, A Field Guide to Responsive Parenting and Trying Not to Be the Reason Your Kids Need Therapy. Pre-order it. When you pre-order an author's book, you're giving them a whole bunch more love than if you actually waited to buy it, because that is how all the bestsellers lists come up. They look at pre-orders. So go pre-order Gwenna's book.
Well, plus, if you're part of our No Guilt Mom community, you probably love stickers and you get those stickers too. You can't miss out on stickers.
And until next time, remember, the best mom's a happy mom. Take care of you. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks for stopping by.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.